happiness. There are two elements that help create harmonious thinking, and they are optimism and positive outlook towards life and others. Optimism is an essential part of social life. Without optimism, without positive outlook towards life and towards other people, towards other things, and even towards God, man continues to suffer. There is a saying from the commander of faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam that said, "Husnu dhanni rahatul qalbi wa salamatul badan." Optimism is a source of the comfort of the heart and well-being of the body. We understand from this saying of the commander of faithful that you can find, of course, in Ghurar al-Hakam, which is a collection of the sayings of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. You can find this hadith. Of course, this hadith means that it is essential for every individual living in the society to maintain optimism and to have an optimistic attitude towards other people. Because if he wants peace of mind, if he wants comfort of the heart — heart actually means mind, it's not that piece of beating organ that pumps the blood into the veins and into the arteries. Heart actually refers to the mind. So if we want comfort of the heart or peace of the mind, if we want salamat al-badan or well-being of the body or health, we need to maintain optimism. We need to have optimism in our life. And also there is a saying from the commander of faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, who says, "Ihtarisu min an-nasi bisu'i dhann." Avoid being suspicious of people around you. So you have to stay away from being suspicious, from being pessimistic towards other people. Optimism and positive expectations of those around you are guarantees of comfort. They bring peace of mind for those who live in the field and society, for those who interact with other people. Contrary to optimism are pessimism and ill thinking of others, which bring a halt to the ability of righteous thinking and which only serve to reduce the ability to move towards perfection. You know, as long as you are pessimistic, as long as you have ill thoughts and maintain ill thinking, you will hamper and you will deny yourself the ability to think properly, and you will deny yourself the ability to move towards perfection. You cannot achieve perfection as long as you are pessimistic towards others, as long as you are suspicious of other people's conduct, of other people's behavior. Now, dear brothers and sisters, optimism can best be described as a light in darkness. With optimism, the love of kindness grows in man. He is able to trust others, to interact with other people. With optimism, he is able to have give and take relationship with other people. Optimism is actually the ability to look at the half full of the glass. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, the sixth Shia Imam, says, "أحسن ظنونكم بإخوانكم تغتنموا بها صفاء القلب ونقاء الطبع." You should maintain positive thinking towards your brothers in faith because it entails cleanness of the heart and nature and your body. So the more optimistic you are, the cleaner your intentions would be. The more optimistic you are, the better your life will be, and you will have a better living condition, you know. The cleanness of the heart, the cleanness of the nature, the purity of the heart and nature is the direct consequence of positive thinking and optimism. Dear brothers and sisters, let's have a break. We will be back.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves
steps, we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Optimism enables man to see a more beautiful color of life. It enables you to achieve the ability to observe all people in a new light, and the power to equally and justly judge each one of them. An optimistic person does not have sufferings. His sufferings vanish and his hopes increase because he keeps his apparent and spiritual relations with the various elements of the society in the best manners. Trust and peace of mind and happiness cannot be achieved in society without positive thinking and without positive approach and without a positive attitude, which we call optimism. So optimism is a great blessing. Optimism helps you interact with other people. Optimism helps you build trust and confidence. Optimism helps you approach other people and have give and take relationships with other people. You as a human being, you as a social being, need to build trust. You need to have the trust of other people. How can you do that? You cannot do it without creating confidence, building confidence, and having an optimistic attitude towards other people, an optimistic view towards other people. As long as there is trust, there will be peace of mind. There will be also mutual relationship. Optimism has direct influence on the happiness of the individual and on the happiness of the society. If everyone in the society begins to trust everyone else, then that society will be a happy society. But if no one trusts no one else, then there's no trust, there's no confidence, there's no peace of mind, because you do not trust your brother does not trust you, and he does not trust other people. So at the end of the day, there will be no interaction, there will be no peace of mind, there will be no trust. Trust among the members of any society is an important factor. It is an important element. It helps achieve advancement in the society. Advancement will not be achieved without optimism. And of course, without optimism, trust cannot be, you know, built and developed. So if you want to create and build trust in the society, you need to be optimistic. You need to maintain optimism. So optimism is very important asset. And that's all for this session. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash. And every word I share, he knows. Allah knows.
In the limelight.
As an enabler of the unlawful killings and the illegal occupation of Palestine, the U.S. must end its complicity and begin holding the Israeli regime accountable for its actions, says Malak Shalabi, writer, in an article titled, "The Israeli Regime Forces Killed a Palestinian U.S. Citizen. Why is the U.S. doing nothing?" Stay tuned for more. Assad Assad, the nephew of Omar, Abdul Mujahid Assad, describes his uncle as a very social and caring man. Omar immigrated to the U.S. in 1970s and became a small business owner in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He and his wife had seven children and many grandchildren, nephews, and nieces. 10 years ago, Omar Assad decided to retire in the village of Jalilia in Ramallah, Palestine, where he was originally from. Assad loved family gatherings and regularly went around to check up on and visit relatives, according to his nephew. He attended a big family gathering on January 11th and was driving back around 20:30 a.m. At this time, members of the Israeli Regime Forces, or IDF, the military force that carries out the occupation of Palestine, were executing an overnight raid in Jalilia. Night raids are a common practice by IDF troops, serving to intimidate Palestinians in their most vulnerable state by invading their safest places while they're sleeping. As Assad was driving home through his village, he was reportedly pulled out of his car by IDF troops, who aggressively handled him, handcuffed him with plastic zip ties, gagged his mouth, blindfolded him, and forced him to lie on his stomach. The forces then dragged him for about 200 meters and beat him to death. His nephew said there were about 40 forces just watching this handcuffed elderly man, aged 80, be repeatedly hit by armed troops across his entire body. Assad suffered from a subsequent heart attack and was left to die on the ground, unconscious and handcuffed. Assad was buried with bruises across his entire body, said Assad's nephew, adding, "What kind of threat does an 80-year-old man pose to armed Israeli regime troops? He was barely able to walk, and they viciously beat him to death." Omar Assad was an American citizen, a fact that has garnered his story much more media attention than it might have otherwise received. However, this fact shouldn't matter, and in many ways, it doesn't matter. The Zionist regime exhibits a reckless disregard for Palestinian life, and its strongest ally, the United States regime, has responded apathetically to the killing of Omar Assad. On January 13th, the U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said the department got in touch with Assad's family to express their condolences, and that it has also been in touch with Israel to seek clarification about this incident. Somehow, the United States managed to cite the beating and killing of an 80-year-old man, a standard feature of any commentary they provide on the Zionist regime's violent actions. Omar Assad's brutal killing illustrates how Palestinian Americans are unprotected by the United States, whose loyalty is to the Zionist regime's first. Meanwhile, Palestinian, American, and Muslim communities in the U.S. have recognized and organized and mobilized to demand action by the U.S. government for Assad's death. Someone who had community ties in Milwaukee, his family, and the Milwaukee's Islamic community hosted an Aza, or gathering, to offer condolences to the family. His daughter, Hala Hamed, told the Washington Post, "We want a thorough investigation from the U.S. government and the U.N. because Israel can't investigate their own crimes." Ned Price had previously said they were going to reference Israeli investigations into the incident. American-Palestine advocacy organizations like American Muslims for Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace, and U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights regularly ignite campaigns to lobby for condemnation or action against the killing, exile, imprisonment, and torture of Palestinians within the homeland, who may be stateless or have varied national privileges. 6 Palestinians have been killed this year, 2022. Omar Assad's family deserves accountability and justice. As an enabler of these unlawful killings and the illegal occupation of Palestine, the United States regime must end its complicity and begin holding the Zionist regime accountable for its actions.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Monday, Yemen's military launched retaliatory attacks deep inside the United Arab Emirates using drones and missiles to strike strategic targets in the UAE. Yemeni forces targeted a strategic oil facility and a fire at Abu Dhabi's international airport. The Yemeni military conducts regular retaliatory attacks against targets in Saudi Arabia over its devastating war on Yemen. But attacks against the UAE, which is fighting alongside Saudi Arabia, has been rare. It's widely believed that the attacks made UAE officials realize their vulnerabilities. The attacks are the greatest damage to the reputation of the UAE because they have always portrayed themselves as a safe and secure country to do business. Yemeni officials have warned they could target more facilities in the UAE. The years-long war on Yemen has killed tens of thousands of people and pushed the country towards humanitarian catastrophe. Following the retaliatory strikes, Israel offered security and intelligence support to the United Arab Emirates. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said the regime is committed to working closely with the UAE against Yemeni forces. He also ordered the Israeli establishment to provide their counterparts in the UAE with any assistance. Since joining the Saudi-led coalition in the invasion of Yemen, the UAE has focused on the southern and coastal regions of Yemen. It's also trying to take control of the strategic and resource-rich ports and islands in that region. Socotra is strategically located at the mouth of the Gulf of Aden, overlooking the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which connects the Red Sea to both the Gulf of Aden and the Arabian Sea. The UAE is annexing the island with the help of the Israeli regime. The UAE is said to be setting up an espionage center for Israel at the Socotra airport in Yemen.
This is not the case. Israel has no business interfering in Yemen any more than Saudi Arabia or the United States do, or the UAE. But by this recent action, which is the people of Yemen simply defending their country and opposing one of the other countries that is causing significant, extreme problems within Yemen.
Al Hilal Emirates Company is said to have signed a contract with Israel to build a spy and intelligence center for the Israeli Air Force at the airport in the city of Hadibo, the center of the Socotra Island. In December of 2021, Bennett became the first leader of the Israeli regime to visit the Persian Gulf state, more than a year after the two sides agreed to establish formal relations under a U.S. brokered deal.
Israel would like to see this as a false flag, would like to convince the United States government and the people of the United States that it must attack Iran because Iran has attacked one of its allies and poses a threat to the existence of Israel. Anything that anyone says or does Israel doesn't like, it considers what it calls an existential threat to Israel.
The UAE officially inaugurated its embassy in Israel in July last year, and then Israel opened its embassy in the Emirati capital in late June. Since they signed the normalization agreement in August last year, Israel and the UAE have signed a raft of deals in various areas, ranging from tourism to aviation and financial services.
Look to the east. The current Iranian administration says that is the policy it is implementing. Tehran prioritizes expanding ties with neighboring and other regional countries. This largely forms the basis of Iran's foreign policy and its deepening ties with eastern powers like China and Russia. The Iranian president's high-profile two-day visit to Russia this week has been widely described as a turning point in relations between Tehran and Moscow. Ebrahim Raisi, who arrived in the Russian capital on Wednesday, sat down for talks with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. The two presidents' discussions lasted 3 hours. Bilateral cooperation in the fields of infrastructure, energy, banking, and trade was the main focus of the talks. Putin praised the two neighbors' close cooperation on the international stage. The two presidents tasked Russian and Iranian foreign ministers to work out a roadmap for cooperation over the next 2 decades. President Raisi said the two neighbors will soon finalize their 20-year comprehensive cooperation agreement. During their meeting on Wednesday, Putin and Raisi condemned unilateralism and stressed the need to confront it. The meeting came as both Iran and Russia are locked in disputes with the United States, which both Tehran and Moscow have condemned for unending unilateralism. Tehran has been targeted by many rounds of unilateral American sanctions, and Russia, already under American sanctions over the situation in Ukraine, is now being threatened again by Washington as tensions over Ukraine run high.
Both Russia and Iran are being subject to the same kind of pressures coming out of Washington by the Biden administration, which is trying to reassert It's the U.S. hegemony over world politics. They're living in the past. The past has long gone past them by, but they haven't realized it yet, and they're trying to use the power of the so-called Western alliance, which today is very much divided in many respects, to pressure countries like Russia, like Iran, like China.
In an address to Russia's lower house of parliament, Duma, on Thursday, the Iranian president said sanctions are a common form of bullying and domination. He added that fighting the sanctions requires a collective response and cooperation among independent nations. Some observers believe that American sanctions have persuaded targeted nations like Iran, Russia, and China to work together more closely. Meanwhile, Raisi also warned that the United States has forged a satanic alliance with the terrorists. He said complicated plans are afoot now to send the terrorists on a new mission to the Caucasus in Central Asia. Russia and Iran have a history of cooperation in the fight against terrorism in the region, especially in Syria. And observers believe they could act together again if necessary. The Islamic Republic seems to be very serious about its look to the East policy. Becoming a full member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization in September last year is considered a major step in that direction. Also, Iran and China's 25-year strategic cooperation agreement, which the two sides began implementing a few days ago, is another major sign that Tehran wants to enhance relations and exchanges with Asian powers.
That's really where the future is. You're going to see probably a revival of what used to be the ancient Silk Road now, with China's Belt and Road Initiative, which now Iran's going to be a part of. And that may, again, put that whole region in the center of economic development to the demise or the lower position by the Europeans and the Americans.
Iran says it is open to more partnerships that benefit both sides and are based on mutual respect.
On Monday, the Yemeni army conducted retaliatory strikes on several targets in the United Arab Emirates. Army spokesman Yahya Sari said the country launched 5 ballistic missiles and a large number of drones at Dubai and Abu Dhabi airports, an oil refinery in Musaffa, and several other sensitive and important sites in the UAE. Local officials said 3 people were killed and 6 others injured after 3 fuel tanker trucks exploded in the storage facility of an Emirati oil firm in the Musaffa area. Fires erupted in the Abu Dhabi International Airport, disrupting flights. This came just days after the Yemeni army repelled an attack by Emirati-backed mercenaries in the province of Ma'arib, killing and injuring dozens. In a statement, the Yemeni army said Monday's attack inside the UAE was a warning to stop its involvement in the Saudi-led war on the country. The army warned the coalition of more painful attacks if it continues its aggression against Yemen.
Just because it is possible to bully or invade a country with little resistance, such as the cases with Yemen and Saudi Arabia and the UAE, doesn't mean that it should be done, and that countries have more of a responsibility to each other and the international community than they do to their own immediate self-gain. I had the privilege of attending many protests in favor of Yemen and protests to stop the bombing and the harassment of Yemen when I was in New York City. And you can see this is a genuine movement. This is so many people from all different walks of life are recognizing the horrors that are being committed against Yemen by Saudi Arabia, by the backed UAE, and it has to come to an end.
The Yemeni military has warned that the UAE won't withstand its future strikes. Earlier this week, Yemen said Saudi Arabia had once again seized a ship carrying much-needed fuel while en route to the country's Hodeidah port. Yemeni officials said the vessel had secured UN clearances to enter Yemen, but it was diverted to the Saudi coast of Jizan. Saudi Arabia has seized several Yemeni-bound fuel ships in recent months, despite an ongoing fuel crisis there. Earlier this month, the Yemeni army released footage of a captured UAE-flagged vessel that had trespassed into the country's territorial waters. Army spokesman Yahya Sari said the ship was carrying military equipment and was engaged in hostile acts against Yemen. The United Nations, however, called on Yemen to return the ship. It also condemned the country's recent retaliatory strikes on the UAE and called for all sides to exercise maximum restraint. It made no mention of the Saudi-led coalition's deadly strikes on Yemen.
And the United Nations has no right to demand that this UAE flagship be returned so it can go back into combat and slaughter goodness knows how many more innocent Yemeni civilians. And so I think that, I mean, Yemen should stand strong, the international community, the anti-imperialist international community should stand strong with Yemen and say absolutely not. Unless the UN is going to play fair and be neutral, and in this case be supportive of Yemen and the right to defense, then the UN has no business saying what should and should not be done in this conflict with the UAE.
Saudi Arabia and its allies have maintained a tight blockade on Yemen, where the population is in dire need of basic supplies such as food and medicine. Riyadh imposed a blockade in 2015, the same year that it launched an air campaign on Yemen. Daily airstrikes have hit the country, leaving tens of thousands of Yemenis dead. The attacks have increased in recent weeks. Almost 7 years after the war started, and despite all the hardships the Arab country is enduring, the Yemeni retaliatory attacks are driving home the message that the Yemenis are not backing down until the aggression against their nation is ended.
The British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, is in hot water, facing a growing leadership challenge. Johnson had already run the gauntlet of public anger for his handling of a sleaze scandal, the awarding of lucrative COVID contracts, and the refurbishment of his Downing Street flat. Now, Johnson is under growing pressure from members of Parliament, some of whom Tory lawmakers, after revelations that he attended a garden party at his Downing Street residence in May 2020 in breach of his government's coronavirus lockdown rules. The scandal even worsened after it was disclosed that a party was also held in Downing Street the night before the funeral of Prince Philip last April, when mixing indoors was banned. The stories about rule-breaking get-togethers had caused deep anger, and to thousands who had lost relatives or friends to COVID-19, intense anguish and pain. The mix was potentially politically lethal for the entire Conservative Party. Johnson himself has shifted from the party's biggest asset, with a Brexit-fueled appeal separate to the Conservative brand, to its biggest liability. Not only had Johnson lost his respect, but also sticking with him risks further contaminating the party brand if the scandals continue. The UK government has launched an internal inquiry into revelations about multiple gatherings by Johnson's staff during COVID lockdowns. Johnson himself has apologized for attending what he called only a work meeting at a time when social mixing was banned. Meanwhile, the opposition, Labour, has seized the opportunity, saying Johnson broke the law, lied, and must resign. The opposition Labour Party, which has surged in the polls since the Partygate revelations began emerging last month, says Johnson is unfit for office. Sir Keir Starmer said the Prime Minister's actions and his inability to take any responsibility for them means he can no longer do his basic duties. A new poll released on Sunday showed that the Labour Party has opened up its biggest lead against the Tories since 2013 amid criticism leveled at Boris Johnson and his party over social gatherings during COVID-19 lockdowns. The poll conducted by Opinium says Johnson's personal approvals fall below the worst figures ever recorded by Theresa May. Just 22% of people approve of the job Johnson is doing as Prime Minister. Also, his party sinks to its worst vote shares since the general election, 10 points behind Labour. Also, around two-thirds of people surveyed believe Johnson and his colleagues have broken the rules and lied about it, and say Johnson should resign. That's why Boris Johnson secured a landslide election victory in 2019. But according to the poll, nearly half of Conservative voters at the 2019 election now say he should have stepped down. The Sunday Times reported that Johnson will look to get on the front foot and save his position by making a series of populist announcements in the coming weeks, including reducing the national health system backlog, tackling the small boat crossings in the Channel, freezing the BBC license fee for 2 years, and introducing a booze ban in Downing Street. But is that enough? The latest poll shows voters across the political spectrum are angry with the revelations, and most of those who supported the Conservatives in the 2019 election are turning against them. Add to it a looming cost of living crisis, inadequate public services, a pandemic to recover from, and ongoing difficulties caused by Brexit. It's now just a question of how long will Boris Johnson survive as the Prime Minister.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, peace in life. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of peace in life in the Islamic lifestyle. Now, when we talk about the peace in the life of a person, basically we are talking about a family. That person can have a peace in his life when he is having a family, and this family is basically is the cause of peace in his life. Now, this family can be only with the husband and wife, and also it can be with the husband and wife and their children. And therefore, we can see that even those couples who do not have kids and they are married to each other, they do not have that kind of peace which those who have kids, who have children. And this couple who's married and they cannot have kids, and they have maybe some medical issues or natural issues due to which they cannot have kids, they always desire for having a kid. Even if they adopt a child, they do have this desire in their heart that maybe we could have our own child. So this peace which comes with the child in the house and the relation between this child and his or her mother and father, this peace only comes with the formation of the family, with having kids only. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of peace in family, in the life, peace in the life. We said that this peace can come with the child. Obviously, when someone can have a child, when a couple have a child, they have more peace in their life as compared to those who do not have any children and the desire for having a child in their whole life. And that's why we can see that there are many people who really refer to a doctor in order to get a child or have a child. And there are different ways which are introduced in today's science with these advancements which the science, especially the medical science, have. But obviously this peace that they are after, it comes with the child. And therefore Islam is talking about this. Islam is saying that in your Islamic lifestyle, if you want to have peace, have child. And also we have seen that, for example, if a family who have, for example, one or two boys in their family, they desire for having a girl. And on the other side, if the family only have girls in their life, they desire or they wish to have a boy as well. So basically, they want to experience both things, like having a boy and a girl in their families. And once the family has a boy and a girl, they think that the family is fulfilled and this family is complete because they have both types of kids. And the peace which they have now wasn't when they did not have either the boy or the girl. So basically, this is the family. And on top of that, Islam says that in khayra nisa'ikumul waludul wadud, that the best woman is the ones who can have kids who are beneficial for you, the who are basically who have mercy, and those who are loving and can have kids. So this is the best woman, that obviously she provides you peace, she provides you love, she gives you affection, she's bringing peace in the life, and on top of that, she's able to bring children, and therefore this family is completed. This family is completed, and the peace that this family has, the other families do not experience such peace in their life. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular, and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes. In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get around to it. However, this Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zara Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zara is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a micro-light aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumption.
The plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is, but I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zara says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zara had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now Zara says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? The Chinese New Year is less than 2 weeks away, and millions of people around the world are in festive mood. In Vietnam, people are preparing to buy each other a special gift. Since this year's animal zodiac sign is a tiger, figurines shaped like the animal are in high demand. The Vietnamese are making, selling, and buying gold-plated tiger models to commemorate the New Year. Making these sculptures is a lengthy and difficult process. It usually requires clay and copper, which are painted, gilded, and polished before being covered with 24-karat gold sheets. People tend to purchase these gifts for the luxury they evoke.
Possessing a zodiac animal model made with precious material such as gold would mean its owner is in the high class in society and is successful economically.
The gold-plated tiger model will firstly bring a luxurious feeling, and secondly, this tiger with wings model shows my hope for my works to take off and have some breakthrough in the new year.
The intricate artworks find their way to gift shops all over Vietnam. They usually sell for between $300 and $3,000. Disability is not an obstacle to success. A group of Japanese with disabilities has proved it as they create incredible handicraft and make a living this way. A shop called Amayaka offers the items made by these disabled individuals. Located in a Tokyo neighborhood, it showcases products ranging from scarves and bags to glassware and colorful cards. Mayaka and all other workshops are part of a new movement aimed at promoting works of people with impairment. In just one of the workshops cooperating with Mayaka, about 20 disabled people are working over there. However, organizers of the movement say these people are still invisible in the society and are not paid fairly for their works despite being experienced in craftsmanship.
Some workers here have a career of more than 30 years. They have been weaving since their school days. They are so experienced that we should refer to them as artisans.
The organizers say they hope that their initiative will promote the works of the people with disabilities and help the society to start thinking about the way disabled workers are being treated. Turtles get a second chance to spread their fins after being found with bellies full of plastic. They were rescued and are now being released back to the sea in Argentina. Two green turtles and four loggerhead turtles were saved from fishing nets in Buenos Aires province. The group was taken to Grupo Marina Foundation, where they recuperated after purging 10 types of plastic from their bodies. Rehabilitation of the turtles lasted over a month and included blood tests and other procedures to make sure they were free of plastic. A biologist with the foundation says the danger of plastic is that it's silent, and usually its dangers are so gradual that it goes unnoticed.
Many times the animal appears to be in perfect health. However, during the checkup and evaluation, we found a large amount of this material inside. So it is important to get rid of the plastic before the condition worsens and it ends up causing the deaths of the specimens.
The turtles had mistakenly eaten plastic, thinking it was food. Wind, waves, and sunshine break down discarded plastic into tiny pieces which litter ocean waters. Much of this plastic waste can be found on beds of seaweed that turtles forage for food. This trash ends up fatally clogging their bellies, causing the decline in the population of this graceful reptile.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The Indian administered Kashmir has the world's only floating post office, a 200-year-old houseboat on a famous Dal Lake in Srinagar. Set up during the British rule in India, the post office has survived throughout the years because of its charm. Our correspondent Shahanabad has more.
The Indian-administered Kashmir was once a princely independent state, out of bounds for outsiders. As the ruler of Jammu and Kashmir disallowed non-locals to own property in this picturesque region. During the British rule in the Indian subcontinent, many Britons tried to find an alternative way of living in Kashmir. Thus, houseboat on the world-famous Dal Lake came into existence. Today, the lake is a home to hundreds of such boats, which are a major attraction for tourists around the globe. This one is a unique boat, the only floating post office in the whole world. This is a 200-year-old boat built by the British. It has truly stood the test of time, as it still functions.
Post office, Dal Lake.
This is not an ordinary post office. We're standing on a heritage property. I've enjoyed my work since the very first day I came here. It's a unique experience to be working here. And every day, I get the chance to meet people from different corners of the world.
The boat is not limited to postal services. It also has a small museum where colorful stamps from the 1980s are put to display, along with a collection of rare philately stamps. The post office is a hot tourist destination in the region. Locals also come to this post office to send postcards to their loved ones, inviting them to visit Kashmir.
Floating post office.
In the age of technology, electronic mail, e-cards and other internet applications have made it extremely easy for people to communicate. But sending a postcard from this floating post office gives one a really different feeling.
The floating post office underwent reconstruction in 2011 and is currently a part of the Indian postal system. Recently, the office started offering banking services, thus attracting more locals.
I have opened an account here for my daughter. It's hassle-free and this place suits my mind. It's not like the usual offices. Visiting this place with kids is like a trip.
Yet another attraction of this post office is this souvenir shop, from where everyone can buy postcards, stamps, traditional crafts and greeting cards.
This floating post office in Kashmir's Dal Lake is like a time machine. It brings people back to two centuries ago and shows them the history of the beautiful region. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Now let's go to Germany to hear the heartwarming story of how technology is turning a young boy's life around. 7-year-old Joshua has a severe lung disease which has made him unable to go to school. But now he can attend his classes from home with the help of an avatar robot. The device sits in Joshua's Berlin classroom, enabling him to listen to the classroom in real time to what his teacher and classmates are saying. Joshua can even interact with everyone else by making the robot display a blinking signal.
Each year, a village in Vietnam becomes awash in red and orange as it gears up for the Lunar New Year with spectacular mass production of incense. January is usually the busiest time when villages are dyeing, drying and whittling bamboo bark to make the fragrant sticks. Also, the scent of each batch is carefully tailored to suit the tastes of the regions where they will be sold. Most households here are involved in this ancient trade, and sales are a major part of their livelihoods. The Lunar New Year will begin on the first day of February. Around this time, sales tick up with throngs of people crowding into temples to light incense during worship.
The chronic shortage of human organs has always been an issue for patients, especially those suffering from heart diseases. But now a major scientific breakthrough is in the making. U.S. surgeons have successfully implanted a heart from a genetically modified pig into a man. Doctors had said the patient, 57-year-old, was unable to have human transplant because of his health conditions. But now he is recovering from his latest surgery. The surgeons say the man is being carefully monitored to determine how the new organ is performing. But for those who want to know why pigs, here is why. Pigs are considered ideal donors because of their size and rapid growth, among other things.
You know, it is a game changer because, you know, now we will have these organs readily available. If this works, and, you know, and I hope it will work, we'll have these organs available. We can, you know, we have the technique of genetically modifying. So if there are more tweaking required for modifying the genes, we will be able to do that, and you know can you know customize basically the heart for or the organ for the patient.
The transplant is the first of its kind in the world and follows years of research. In the U.S. alone, about 110,000 people are currently waiting for an organ transplant. Also, more than 6,000 patients die each year before getting one. A kingdom of ice and snow. Don't be surprised. It's an international sculpture festival held annually in the Chinese city of Harbin. This year, the venue brims with sports elements in a runner-up to the 2022 Winter Olympics scheduled in Beijing. The annual Winter Festival is the largest of its kind, where sculptors spend weeks using ice and snow to create structures under a given theme. The upcoming Winter Games is the theme this year, as one can visualize giant statues of Bing Duanduan. The adorable panda mascots are major attractions of the exhibition. The chief designer says an ice tower standing in the center of the park features 24 vertical structures, referring to the 24th Winter Olympics.
In terms of the design concept, the sculpture features 24 vertical structures referring to the 24th Winter Olympics to be held in Beijing. The spiral array form also indicated the proactive spirit of the Olympics. The free and upward effect is a vivid presentation of the Olympic flame.
The annual festival, which is being held for about three decades, usually attracts domestic and foreign tourists. But COVID-19 restrictions have limited the crowds over the past couple of years. Harbin is located in northeast China and receives cold winter wind from Siberia. An average winter temperature there is around minus 17 degrees Celsius.
IRIB English Radio.